Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Sunday, June 27th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you're all enjoying your weekend. The title of today's podcast, More Signs of Stagflation. Last week, the title of the podcast was On the Road to Stagflation. That was a question, and I think we answered that question during the length of that podcast, and the answer is yes. So this week, it's an elaboration of this because, of course, we got more data from last week. And to me, this is indicative of further signs of stagflation. So what is stagflation on its face? Well, it's an inflationary environment. Check, check, check. It's an environment with high unemployment. Check. And I unfortunately think that that's going to get worse, and we'll talk about that here momentarily. And then, of course, just your stagnant economy, which is why you have higher unemployment. And it's actually why you would have higher inflation, too. Because if you have a stagnant economy, you're not as productive, you're not producing as many goods and services, but you may very well still have some demand for some of those basic services, which has been my argument from the beginning, to counter some of those who are in the deflationist camp, because they're looking at the whole basket of goods. I don't care about the whole basket of goods. I care about the things that you need, because I honestly believe that this is going to be a decade about survival. So more emphasis is on those goods and services that you actually need to live, to survive. I couldn't care less about the crap that you don't need. What gadget gizmo comes out next? I don't care about those things. So that's stagflation. Stagnant economy, high unemployment, and inflation. And high inflation is what we are contending with now. Of course, they don't want to admit it. If they do, they'll only say that it's transitory and that it's only due to base effects because how bad last year was. Okay, well, we're running out of runway for that argument. So how much longer are they going to be able to do this? Now, they're going to continue to beat this dead horse, believe me, for as long as they can, for as long as markets continue to buy the narrative that this is just transitory, that it's just from base effects, that it's just supply chain disruptions. All of these things will eventually alleviate themselves out. Now, of course, they will alleviate themselves out. The question is, how long is it going to take? I think it's going to take a very long time. Plus, they are not stopping the printing press, which is what we're going to go into a little bit more in depth today than what we typically do when we go over our weekly data dive with respect to initial jobless claims in the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. So I want to provide a little bit more perspective on what's actually going on. And just an example as to what the Federal Reserve has been coming out and saying, and then really taking a look to see what they're actually doing, because that's really the important piece. That's the big piece here. That's what you really have to pay attention to. Not just what they say, but what they do. That's where you got to put a lot of the weight and emphasis. And we're going to get to that momentarily as well. I want to talk about median house prices, because of course there's no inflation. We'll see otherwise. And then sort of to kickstart this art, we had that meeting last week, was it? It was the meeting of the minds, I'll call it, between our demented president, dingbat Janet Yellen, our Treasury Secretary, Jay Powell, chair of the Federal Reserve, and Mr. Gensler, the new head of the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, I don't know what these idiots possibly really could have talked about. But can you imagine being a fly on the wall in this meeting with these four geniuses? I mean, one of them doesn't know where they are. One of them doesn't know what they're doing. The other one's just happy to be anywhere. And the other one thinks they know everything. Now, you tell me which one I'm thinking about with all of those descriptions, and I'll give you a prize. This is our government. This is our quote-unquote leadership. We have stock market and every other type of market manipulation out the wazoo, and Gensler and the SEC, under it doesn't matter the administration, under the Trump administration, under the Biden administration, it doesn't matter. They're not doing anything. You have what's going on social media, manipulating the stock market, couldn't care less. CEOs of publicly traded companies moving markets, couldn't care less. Nobody goes after them. This is the wild, wild west, and a lot of people are going to end up getting hurt. So it's amazing that those four people sat in a room and discussed something. And I'm sure it's not going to work out for us, we the people, at the end of the day. And some somewhat breaking news, not a surprise to us here, because I've been saying this for months. It was just a matter of time, but it looks like there is going to be an infrastructure bill that gets passed, quote-unquote, bipartisan. And of course, it's about $1 trillion. No surprise there either. Now, when will they actually start this? When will it actually pass and be signed into law? When will they actually start some of these projects is anybody's guess, but the money will start to be spent. We will start to borrow more money. And this is really perfect timing for the Fed because they needed an excuse to print more money so they can continue to buy up Uncle Sam's debt so they can continue to pump these markets higher and higher. That's all this is about. It's keeping these markets propped up. This is not fundamental growth. This is all smoke and mirrors. This is a scam. This is one of the biggest criminal heists that has ever been conducted in all of world history. Yet you stay distracted with all of the cultural war BS that Fox News and MSNBC and CNN throw at you 24/7. They want us fighting each other amongst ourselves, not paying attention to the men and women behind the curtain. That's where you have to stay focused. That's where you have to look. You don't like what somebody's doing? Don't do it. When it comes to what somebody believes culturally speaking, somebody wants to go to this club, somebody wants to go to that club, somebody wants to do this behind closed doors, that's their business, let them do it. Now, if you start entering it into the school system and you're starting to go after kids, that's a different story. I can understand that. That needs to be discussed. That needs to be fought against. But this constant back and forth, they're just distracting you. They're making you play monkey in the middle, and you can guess who the monkey is. It's not them, it's you. Yet there is little conversation, even in the financial press, about what the Federal Reserve is doing. And even when they do talk about it, a lot of them congratulate what the Fed is doing and praise them as heroes and saviors of the economy and of the markets. Very little criticism. And that's how you know that that's the target. Find out who you can't criticize. That's the enemy. That's the target. But no, you can't have those conversations. Can't bring that stuff up. And then a sad statistic when it comes to small businesses. The number of small businesses open, okay, is down by 39%. 39% since January of 2020. So if there's no small business recovery, then there is no economic recovery. Period. End of story. But that's what this is all about. This isn't about economic recovery. This is about power. This is about control. This is about consolidation. That's what it's all about. This is what we highlight and stress in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. That was what part three of our book was all about. Consolidation. Laying it out for you, industry by industry. That is what the game is all about. It's about screwing over the little guy to accumulate more power, more control. That's consolidation. That's what's going on here. It's in our face. The PPP loans, disaster. The Federal Reserve's Main Street lending facility, we'll appropriate or whatever. We'll set aside $600 billion to help small businesses, but we'll only use about maybe $10 billion of that, if that. Meanwhile, 39% are out of business. You see what's going on here? Now, again, I'm not arguing that these businesses should have been bailed out. I didn't want them bailed out. Period. End of story. But they gave money to everybody else. The Federal Reserve bought the corporate bonds of Apple, of AT&T, of Verizon, of Toyota, of Volkswagen. They didn't need it. But that's okay. And that's an area now where the Fed says that they might actually start tapering. Well, it's just $14 billion in corporate debt holdings that we have. It's not that much. They shouldn't have had a dime because it's against their charter, meaning it's illegal, but they pulled it off. They pulled it off because they kind of got it in there with the Nobody Cares Act 1.0. Kind of gave them some leeway to do some things that they really aren't supposed to be doing. 96-0, no votes for America, by the way. Don't ever forget that. Nobody Cares Act. Okay? So it doesn't matter if you're Republican, conservative, Democrat, liberal. They all screwed us over. You understand this? Okay? Now, they say they're going to start tapering that $14 billion, which is a drop in the bucket, especially once we get to the Fed's balance sheet update and we break it down over the past couple of months. You're going to see what an insult this is. So again, it's not just paying attention to what they say, it's looking at and paying attention to what they actually do. This is also why, as I stressed a couple, whether this has been maybe a month or two ago already, when dingbat Janet Yellen, our Treasury Secretary, was supposed to go up to Capitol Hill to take part in a hearing or some type of conversation with Congress. It was like a roundtable discussion with respect to small businesses. What are we going to do to help our small businesses? She was supposed to be there. This is part of her duty as Treasury Secretary. She was supposed to be there. She didn't show up. And I said, well, the reason she didn't show up is because she knows what's going on. Why show up to a small business roundtable discussion or a hearing when she knows that small businesses are going out of business? There is no small business. We're putting them out. We don't care about them. That's all it is, folks. This is all a game. They show you what they're doing. They tell you what they're doing. Just because they show something shiny out there and put it out there for you, it doesn't mean they're actually going to follow through with it. Again, $600 billion allocated for a Main Street lending facility program, and they use a fraction of a fraction of it. They don't care. They don't care about you. All right? Got some housing data out with respect to prices. So for all housing, for all houses sold, the updated median house price now stands at $350,000. This is an all-time high, $350,000. This is on the month-by-month basis. But looking back, historically speaking, and this data is broken down quarterly, so there'll be a little bit of a difference, but it's still in the ballpark here. So you go back before the great financial crisis. Again, this is all houses, median price. First quarter of 2007, it peaked at $257,400. That was the median selling price amongst all homes, new and existing. $257,400, first quarter of 2007. Fourth quarter of 2020, that price stood at $358,700, an increase of 39.4%. Now, I wonder if your wages increased by 39.4%, plus you know that everything else that you purchased went up as well. But hey, there's no inflation, right? There's no inflation. Can't figure it out. People can't understand why Donald Trump got elected. If the Obama administration was working economic miracles, then Hillary Clinton, as flawed and pathetic as she is, would have become the president of the United States. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. People don't make this connection. People want to argue that there was no inflation over the past decade. There was. That's why Trump became president, because people were sick and tired of the system. Can't get ahead. Cost of living's too high. This is why people were protesting and rioting before the pandemic in 2019. Not because the cost of living was so damn affordable, but because they can't afford to live. Whatever the government tried to do, it was the final straw. That was it. A tax increase. Higher prices for fuel, reducing subsidies, whatever the case was, people said that was it. How people can't get this through their heads is truly beyond me. How they make an argument that this has been lower prices, I don't understand it. I do not understand. I don't know what they're looking at. But that's the situation. Now, if you're looking at the sales of new homes, okay, just new. Median price back in the first quarter of 2007, which is when it also peaked, was $262,600. In May, or the second quarter of 2021, that number now stands at $374,400, or an increase of 42.6%. 42.6% on new, 39.4% increase on new and existing. since the peak of the great financial crisis, or before it, to today. Those are the types of increases that we are witnessing. And they're still going up, because and it's not about people buying these homes anymore. People can't afford them. Individuals, couples, young families can't afford it anymore. They don't care. The authorities don't care. The Fed couldn't care less. Why? Because it's all about power, consolidation, and control. But you know who is continuing to purchase these houses? Pension funds, private equity, BlackRock, Blackstone, hedge funds. This is as if it's the Great Reset. You will own nothing and you will like it. This is not some tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. This is in their literature. This is in their media releases. The Great Reset. You will own nothing and you will like it. Well, boy, oh boy, doesn't it seem like that's the case, making so many things unaffordable, unobtainable. To not even just the average American, but almost to everybody now, with the way these prices continue to climb higher. But there's no inflation, and the Fed continues to purchase billions and billions of dollars of mortgage-backed securities. And while they may admit, as Jay Powell did a couple months ago, that, yeah, it is somewhat worrisome that housing prices at these levels is pricing out perhaps a generation, you know, just a generation of would-be home buyers, but we're going to continue to make prices even higher, meaning it's going to be even more unaffordable and unobtainable for those individuals. But we don't care about you. That's the real headline. But these financial journalists never seem to pick up on it and really challenge them. Then we got U.S. core PCE prices. They rise the most since 1992. The PCE, this is the Fed's preferred quote-unquote inflation metric. But even that has risen the most since 1992. An increase of 3.4% year over year in May. Okay? But it's just transitory. There's nothing to see here, folks. Just continue to pay higher prices. You don't have to worry about it. We got market performance. We have the dollar index at 91.80, so still flirting with the 92 handle. The euro against the greenback is below the 120 handle. The British pound against the greenback is back below $1.40. So some dollar strength continuing through. We'll see how long this can persist. Again, a lot of this was on the back of the Fed's decision saying that, well, you know, we might increase interest rates 2 years from now. Well, really, even further than that, at the end of 2023. We might increase interest rates by the end of 2023 a couple times. That caused the panic. That for some reason, that caused some strength in the U.S. dollar in this twisted, upside-down world in which we live. But that's what happened. Bitcoin is at $33,000 a coin. And we have seen a lot of volatility in Bitcoin over the past couple of weeks as well, to put it lightly. But onward and upward, all of these markets continue to climb higher. S&P 500, NASDAQ hitting all-time highs. Who could care less? On the commodity price front, we have WTI at $73.98, Brent at $76.10, natural gas $3.50, all continuing to march higher. And what happens if these prices become sticky? What happens if they continue to climb higher? We have a lot of calls now for oil to hit $100. You know, this is reminiscent of what took place a decade ago when it was around $100 or below $100, but everybody was saying, well, $100's close. So it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Everybody starts talking about $100, and it's just a matter of time until it gets there. So can you imagine what will happen if oil prices hit $100? We have high gasoline prices across the country right now. Can you imagine if the average price per gallon were to hit $4? This now becomes a psychological and behavioral effect to see $100 per barrel for oil and $4 per gallon gasoline prices. And of course, all of this passes through to everything that we consume, everything that we do. So people who want to argue, as I do, about what took place a decade ago with the Arab Spring and all of the other protests and riots that took place globally, you had higher prices and you had oil, which was $100 a barrel at the time. So that's one of the arguments that people make trying to counteract. Well, yes, inflation is high right now. And again, they'll make the argument that it's transitory. It's just off of base effects. But back then during the Arab Spring, we had oil prices that were $100 a barrel. But what happens if we get there now? Now their argument is completely shot. Well, that's where we're likely headed. Okay? And if, and again, all of those prices will be passed through, or they're going to be absorbed. And that's going to be something we get to here momentarily as well when we get to the initial jobless claims as to how this is going to make its way throughout the economy, in my opinion. We have gold at $1,781 an ounce, silver $26.10 an ounce, so regaining the 26 handle, so finding a little bit of support there. Copper is at $4.28 per pound, and lumber continues to march lower at $779 per 1,000 linear board feet, and I'm going to go back to that here in a moment. And Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is at 1.53%. Okay, so moving upward a little bit, so obviously meaning a little bit of a sell-off in the bond market. So lumber, all right, $779, let's just call it $800 to make it easy, all right? So from its all-time high that we saw, we're basically below 50%, okay? This is a big sell-off, 50%. But guess what, folks? We're still 100% higher than its upper range, okay? And what I mean by that is if you go back and look at its long-term range here, price range is what I'm talking about. So if you go back to the 90s, early 90s, you're going to get a trading range, if you will, from the 90s, basically up until now. You'll peak at 400, maybe you'll go above it. You'll go down to 200, maybe drop a little bit below it. But that's it. So you got this $200 price range for the price of lumber since the early 1990s. All right? We are now at $800. That's what I'm talking about. We're at twice its range, its upper bound. Now, is it possible that lumber prices will continue to go lower? Yes. Nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down. It's quite possible. My question is, where will they start to level out? Where, you know, are we going to start a new trading range? Is this going to be the beginning of a new trading range from here on in? And what happens if that's $600? That's still 50% above the $400 price range, which was the upper range, the upper price of that long-term price range. So for people that want to argue that, oh, this is just all going to come back down, oh, lumber prices have collapsed 50%. Yeah, that's true. They have collapsed 50% from their all-time highs. But they're still at $800, which was a price point at the beginning of the year, which caused an increase of $24,000 just to build a new home. Just because of the price of lumber. And that doesn't take into consideration all of the other construction materials, which have also increased in price. So you understand why I talk about the stickiness of prices? Where are these things going to end up leveling out? Because $24,000, that's a lot of money. And when it was at $1,700, that added an additional $36,000 to build a new house. Okay? That's a ton of money. Most people don't have that. That would be a sizable down payment. People, we know half the country doesn't have $400 in cash in the event of an emergency. So where are they going to come up with $24,000? Where are they going to come up with $36,000 just for the price of lumber? They're not. And that's why you're going to own nothing and you're going to like it. That's why it's all about power, control, and consolidation. Now, well, of course, we'll continue to follow this. That's why I talk about lumber every day, because this is just something that has obviously been on a meteoric rise. It's now come down 50% from its all-time high. And what happens from here? Because this is important. Because this is something that we're likely going to see with a lot of other commodities as well. Where does it start to form a new trading range? Because that's important moving forward. Now, onward to the initial jobless claims report. So for the week ending June 19th, on a seasonally adjusted basis, the number comes in at 411,000. Last week's figure was revised upward by 6,000 and now stands at 418,000. So on a non-seasonally adjusted basis for the week ending June 19th, the number comes in at 393,000. The prior week was at 408,000. For the week ending June 12th, this is continuing claims on a seasonally adjusted basis. The number comes in at 3.39 million, a week-over-week decrease of 144,000. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, the number comes in at 3.2 million, a week-over-week decrease of 94,000. So that's in the right direction, although weekly jobless claims themselves at 411,000 is not good, especially when market expectations were, again, around 380,000. So off the mark on that, and we are still about twice as high as where we were from before the pandemic. Before the pandemic, initial jobless claims were about 200, maybe 250,000 if it was a bad report. So we're still twice that number, to put things into perspective. So we are still far from out of the woods, okay? And I'm going to talk about a little bit more as to what that means, as to why, to me, this is further signs of stagflation. And now if we're looking at the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program for the week ending June 19th, that number comes in at about 105,000. So in aggregate, if you're looking at initial jobless claims, that 411,000 figure, that's the state number, okay? That's official, that's traditional unemployment benefits from the state. The PUA program, of course, was one of the children of the Nobody Cares Act. So combining these two programs on a week by week basis here, you're at over 500,000. That is not a good number at all, especially when we're told we're in the midst of a recovery and when we're told that there are help wanted signs all over the place. So what might this mean? Well, if we look at the total aggregate number, so how many Americans continue to claim some form of unemployment insurance, that number comes in at 14.8 million. So that takes into consideration regular state, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, the PUA and PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and WorkShare program gives us the grand total, again, of 14.8 million Americans. This is actually a week-over-week increase of about 3,800. And this is for the week ending June 5th. Recall that the aggregate figure lags by a couple of weeks. The biggest increases came in the PEUC program at 108,000 week over week and extended benefits at about 98,000. The biggest week over week drops were in the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, 175,000, and regular state week-over-week decrease of 29,000. So, little change from last week. Again, 14.8 million. That gives us a de facto unemployment rate of about 10.6%. This upcoming Friday will be the first Friday of the month already, so we got another month behind us. It's unbelievable how fast this year is moving. So we will get the official jobs report on Friday. The current official unemployment rate stands at 5.8%. So we still have a long way to go. So how can we sort of square this circle with you know, all of these help wanted signs all over the place, yet we have initial jobless claims above market expectations and still in 400,000 for the past couple of weeks? What's going on here? Well, folks, I say this here all the time. When you have increasing prices, there's only so much that producers, that suppliers can do. They can pass that price on to the consumer, but then obviously the consumer is going to say, that's a higher price, I don't want it, or I don't want as much as I used to buy. That's the law of demand, okay? And those businesses, those producers, those suppliers, they don't want to lose the customers. But what do they have to contend with? Well, now they're going to get their margins squeezed. So are they going to eat that entire price increase? Yeah, well, some of them are going to, because they don't want to lose their customers. They don't want to pass those prices on. But for how long can they continue to eat that price increase? So they can absorb all of it. They can do a hybrid. They can absorb some of it. They can pass some of it on to the consumer. But once their margins start to get really squeezed, what might they start to do if they say, well, yeah, we're going to try to absorb it, but and we don't want to pass it on to the consumer, but we need to maintain margins. What will they start to do? They'll start to lay people off. They'll start to lay people off. And the fact that we have seen back-to-back weeks, over 400,000 again, is indicative that that might be what is underway throughout this economy, which we already got the inflation. This is the higher prices. This is why their margins are getting squeezed. This is why they're laying people off. So now you got the inflation. And if you have high unemployment, which we do, and if it continue, and if it starts marching higher, that's your stagflation, folks. It's that simple. There's nothing else to be discussed. That's it. I don't care what somebody brings up on a chart, graph, history, this, that, the other. Because we can counter them every step of the way with something else. Now, I'm open, of course, to hearing their arguments, and I do listen to their arguments, and I understand where they're coming from. I just wholeheartedly disagree with them. I think they are wrong. The inflation is here. It's not going away. High unemployment is here. It's not going away. We haven't dealt with the fraud cycle. We got zombie companies out the wazoo. How are you going to have growth? You're not. You're not. And if you continue to have higher prices, which I believe we're going to, how are you going to protect your margins? Because you're not going to be able to pass all of these prices on to the consumer. It's just not going to happen. So you're going to have to lay people off. Because personnel prices, your wages, your salaries, that's where you can save a lot of money. So personnel starts to get hacked off. That may very well be what we are starting to see. Now, last week when we had that 412,000 figure, whatever it was, I said this is just a number, but this is a reversal as to what we have been witnessing over the past couple of weeks prior. And I said, that's just a data point. Maybe it's a turning point. We'll have to follow through with next week, which of course was this week. So we are continuing to see it. Now we will obviously wait to see what comes through with the jobs report, and we'll see what happens with the initial jobless claims next week to see if this is the start of some type of trend where more people are being laid off. Because these businesses are trying to protect their margins. They're trying to protect their balance sheets, their income statements. This is business 101. They're trying to survive. Business is not charity. So this is concerning. And these are further signs of stagflation. Now you want to understand the inflationary piece of this? Oh, let's talk about it. Let's look at the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. It now stands at $8.101 trillion. $8.101 trillion. This, of course, is a new all-time high, and this is a week-over-week increase of $37 billion. So again, we can listen to what they say. A few weeks ago, we're going to start to taper our corporate bond holdings of about $14 billion. It's going to take us from now until the end of the year, maybe. But of course, within that time period, they've increased their balance sheet by tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars. Again, don't pay attention. Don't just listen to what they say. Pay attention to what they actually do. So a week-over-week increase of $37 billion. Now, again, I said at the top of the podcast, I wanted to provide a little bit more context and perspective as to what they have been doing over the past couple of months. All right? So if we look from June 2nd to June 23rd, it's a increase to their balance sheet of $166 billion. Okay? If you look basically at the monthly gain from May 26th to June 23rd, the most recent data point that we have, it's an increase of $198 billion. Now, the reason I bring this up is because the Fed says, well, we're committed to our quantitative easing program, which is $120 billion per month at minimum. We want to remain committed to at least $120 billion per month in purchases, and most of these purchases come in the form of U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, okay? So $120 billion, we're now at $198 billion from May, from the end of May to the end of June, okay? So they're exceeding it, which, to be fair, they said, well, we at least what, $120 billion. So, of course, it could be more, and it is. And one of the reasons that we saw a couple of weeks ago a huge spike in their balance sheet is because they had their FOMC meeting. They didn't want to spook the markets because they said, oh, we're going to increase interest rates maybe by the end of 2023. We might increase them two times by the end of 2023. What, by 50 basis points, a quarter basis point here, a quarter basis point there? Get the hell out of here. Okay? But we don't want the markets, we don't want them to throw a tantrum. So let's really juice our balance sheet that week. And that's exactly what they did. We know the games that they're playing. That's why I always say here, and I've been saying it several times today, don't just listen to what they say. Look at what they do. We were all over it. All over it. They wanted to cushion the blow. They know that they are the market. Period. End of story. Take away all of this funny money, and let's see where the S&P, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and the NASDAQ stand. Let's do it. Let's see how strong these markets are. But nobody wants to bring that up. Now, if you go back to April 28th and run it through June 23rd, again, the Fed's balance sheet, that's an increase of $320 billion. Now, if they were just to hit the $120 billion mark on both months, of course, that would be an aggregate $240 billion, but they blew through that by an additional $80 billion. Now, I'm throwing around these numbers like it's nothing because that's what these idiots have got us talking about. We throw around hundreds of billions of dollars like it's nothing. We were in panic mode. We were in a tizzy. Even Democrats were during the great financial crisis. Oh, we got to save it. We got to come up with a big package, a troubled asset relief program. $800 billion. Oh, that's no, we can't do that. That's too much money. Where are we going to get this money from? Now we throw around trillions like it's nothing. Inflation, folks, you can't buy as much as you used to. $700 billion just doesn't buy you what it used to buy you. It could save the financial system a decade ago. Now, we can't walk down the street without spending $700 billion. It's ridiculous. Now, if you break this down even further, there are balance sheet. It's mainly comprised, of course, of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. So despite the fact that housing prices continue to climb higher and higher and higher and higher, they remain committed to purchasing at least $40 billion per month in mortgage-backed securities. No end in sight. There's no crisis here. Housing prices aren't collapsing. They were collapsing during the great financial crisis. It doesn't mean that they were justified in doing it. But that was their excuse and people bought into it. Prices keep going up. So what's the excuse? The excuse is power, control, consolidation, but they will never admit that to you. So if you look at their treasury holdings are, of course, now at an all-time high as well, at about $5.2 trillion. Again, another all-time high. Prior to the pandemic, their low prior to the pandemic was at $2.1 trillion. So we have an increase of 150%. This is debt monetization. We are a banana republic. Okay? This is what this means. But don't ask serious questions and don't even think about this stuff. You're not allowed to. Mortgage-backed securities, $2.354 trillion. Also a new all-time high. It's low prior to the pandemic. And when I say low prior to the pandemic, I just mean right before the pandemic. I'm not talking about all the way back. So prior to the pandemic was at $1.4 trillion. So this represents an increase of 71.4% in their mortgage-backed securities holdings. All right. Now, if you should add these holdings up of their treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, you come in at $7.51 trillion. That's a ton of money. But that doesn't take us to our grand total on the balance sheet of $8.1 trillion. So there's a gap of about $600 billion. And the reason I bring this up is because this gap of $600 billion, of course, this is the other junk that they have purchased over the years with, you know, justifying the unjustifiable with one emergency facility after the next. So this is all the scraps, okay? The bulk, again, is U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. So even the junk, that represents $600 billion. Now, the reason I stress this number is because if you look at the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, historically speaking, going back to the Great Financial Crisis, 2008-2009, the total balance sheet of the Fed at that time was just shy of $900 billion. And the vast majority of those holdings were U.S. Treasuries. That's just the garbage today, folks. $600 billion. That's just the junk. Fed's balance sheet, slightly below $900 billion during the Great Financial Crisis. That was it. So we basically increased it by tenfold. And that's where we're going to be by the end of the year. And of course, this was all transitory. Quantitative easing was all transitory. It was temporary. This is a once-in-a-lifetime financial and economic crisis. We had to do something. Oh, we have to do something. So let's do quantitative easing. They tell us it'll just be temporary. It's been here since then. This thing is about to become a teenager. It's about to apply for a driver's license. And now we're supposed to believe them that inflation is just going to be transitory? The same institution, the same people that said subprime was just going to be contained to subprime? Oh, well, maybe it'll leak over to the broader housing market, but that'll most definitely just stay in the housing market. Oh, no, it just blew up the entire global financial system. We're supposed to believe these people? And my God, did you see our president whispering? How creepy was that? He's gone. He is gone. He is gone. And do we really want Kamala in there? For God's sake, this is the best we can do. You understand why this is a banana republic? This is a joke. Yet people don't care. They really don't. Because as long as these markets keep going higher, that's it. Doesn't matter at what expense. It doesn't matter who's rioting, who's trying to have a revolution in their country because they can't afford to feed their kids. Couldn't care less. As long as your retirement account, your trading account keeps going up, people don't care. And they know this. Because they'll start to care when that number goes down. And that's why they are jacking up their balance sheet week after week after week after week. Not just them. Other global central banks as well. Because that's all they have left. I hope I'm making this point crystal clear. Last week on the road to stagflation, a question, we answered it yes. This week, more signs of stagflation. It's in our faces. So it'll be interesting to see what comes in the official jobs report next Friday. It'll be interesting to see what comes through with the initial jobless claims report, obviously. And it'll even be interesting, even though I don't give a lot of weight to it, it'll be interesting to see what the ADP figure is with private sector jobs, because that number has been just completely off the mark with what we get from the official number. Now, one of them may very well be manipulated. We can guess which one that is, because we have to maintain the narrative. We have to maintain the ability of the Federal Reserve to continue to pump the press, and the printing press, of course, and it has to continue the narrative for Congress to continue to spend more money that we don't have. All right? And we have eviction moratoriums that we still have to contend with. Yeah, maybe that's been extended by another month, but my God, I mean, how much longer is this going to last? It's not. It's going to come to an end, and that's not going to end well either. And that will put more pressure on this stagflationary environment. That'll be more gasoline on this fire. Okay. So we got a long, long way to go. If you've been with the Capital News, this is no surprise to you. If you're new, welcome to the program. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We covered a lot of ground today. Obviously, I like to typically keep these to about a half an hour. Of course, we're over that now, but I haven't been on past week, so I wanted to make sure that we covered as much ground as possible and hope to get back into the swing of things of at least putting out a few a week once my schedule gets calmed down a little bit further. But there you have it, more signs of stagflation. Prepare yourselves if you haven't already, because it's only going to get worse from here. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.